Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as I said, I've spent the day reading John Bolton's book, and there was one part of it that got me thinking today. Because as I've said, you know, my concern has been, you know, Donald Trump has appointed his 200th judge, and, you know, a lot for a first term. Absolutely. And, you know, it got me thinking about, as John Bolton is writing his book about, you know, people, the conservatives are all thrilled that, you know, you're getting all these judges, and they basically sold their souls for these judgeships. And he points out in his book that, you know, while conservatives may, you know, be okay with the fact that Trump is pursuing his reelection and packing the courts with all of this stuff, he was saying that Democrats might be happy if Trump's reelected because he'll be thinking about legacy, and that he'd probably be more pliable. And this is something I've said 100 times. If I had to take the White House or the Senate, give me the Senate, because I think Trump is movable on a lot of stuff. But interesting that Bolton kind of had the same take. But on the judge front, interesting article over at the Washington Post on the Republican Party basically selling their souls for these conservative justices. And here to talk about his article, I've asked Bill Scherer to come talk with us. Bill, thanks for taking time for us.
Great to talk to you again.
So I like the premise. It gave me a little bit of hope, I'll be honest. I've been really down about the number of judges. It's a huge number, 200 in a first term. But as you went through and you laid it out, that this is just, you know, the normal kind of thing. The next president, you know, if it's a Democrat, will come in and do the natural course of events, and we'll be on the other side, probably right where we ended up.
Well, the thing that, you know, the last 3.5 years, as, you know, Trump has hit the ground running on judges, he's gotten them at a faster clip than Obama did and George Bush did. The quality of the judges is going down. You have less American Bar Association qualified ratings for these judges, so that's kind of disturbing. But all these stories over the years rarely talk about how many total judgeships there are and how many total judges his predecessors had.
Right.
So, yeah, Trump's hit 200 judges faster than anybody since Jimmy Carter. And that 200 includes the two Supreme Court judges. So it's 198 lower court judges. Well, there are 851 lower court judgeships. So he's at 23% of the federal judiciary, lower courts. Barack Obama had 327 lower court judges, and George Bush had 326, and Bill Clinton, if I remember correctly, was 376. So if Trump had two terms and he was maintaining that pace, yeah, he'd get to about half the judiciary. But the likelihood at the moment is that's not what's going to happen. And his fast clip is going to be less important than the fact he's going to have 4 years and not eight. And if Democrats get the White House and the Senate, again, an if, but not implausible,
right,
there's no judicial filibuster anymore, Trump's clip is going to be probably matched by Biden's clip because the procedural obstacles aren't there anymore.
And you know, because as I was reading the article, that came to my mind, that they've basically just put anybody in, whereas in the past, you actually had to have a little bit of give and take to get to the number of votes you needed to confirm. So you didn't get, you know, really unqualified people and ideologues like we're getting out of Trump. Or is that just me being partisan?
Well, look, you know, Clinton's rate of confirmation was better than Bush and Obama. Let's remember, Democrats fought Bush pretty hard on judges to the point when they started musing about the so-called nuclear option, which was getting rid of the judicial filibuster with a straight majority vote by bending the Senate rules. They didn't do it. There was that gang of eight that prevented that from happening. But Democrats were pushing the boundary on filibustering judges more so than had happened under Clinton. And that escalated further with Barack Obama. So, you know, George Bush gets less than Bill Clinton. Obama's first term was a slower pace, and Democrats get fed up, and they do get rid of the filibuster in the second term, and Obama catches up in year 5 and 6 of his presidency, he catches up, and then Republicans take the Senate in 2014, and that slows down again. But the net of it is he ends up with about the same as George W. Bush. Now, we're at a point where the filibuster is gone, and Republicans are like, oh, you silly Democrats, Obama, Harry Reid, you got rid of the filibuster. Look, Donald Trump took advantage and got all these judges. Well, Senate rules apply to all parties. So whoever gets that moment when you got the presidency and the Senate in line, they're all going to take advantage just the same.
Right.
And it's all going to be rough parity, and no one is ever going to fully capture the judiciary, which is how the founders intended it. So if you're a Republican, a conservative, and you're thinking, I'm going to swallow Donald Trump, I'm going to swallow protectionism, I'm going to swallow the abandonment of entitlement reform, I'm going to swallow Putin and Kim Jong-un and the abandonment of the Kurds, and it's all going to be okay because we're going to get those judges. It's just not how the system works, guys. The next party's going to have their bite at the apple, and it's not going to work out the way you thought it was going to work out.
Right. And the judges that he got, I mean, you know, these last couple of decisions coming out of the Supreme Court, yeah, I don't know. Some of my evangelical friends not happy.
Well, this is the other part of it. I mean, the Supreme Court is designed by the founders to be as insulated as possible from political pressure. Alexander Hamilton lays this out in Federalist 78, that the judiciary is normally kind of a weak branch that gets steamrolled by the president and the Congress. And so he said, let's prevent that from happening by giving them lifetime appointments, and therefore they can't be pressured. And the Republican objective with this presidency and the Bush presidency was, let's vet these guys to the nth degree so they won't betray us. We'll know that deep down they're Republican loyalists, they're conservative activists, and they'll do what we want when they want them to. And the thing, once you get there, once John Roberts gets there, you can say, you know what? I can uphold Obamacare and can't do anything about it. You want me to put a citizenship question in the census? Too bad. Not going to let you. Neil Gorsuch wants to say, I'm going to have a textless interpretation that expands transgender rights. You can't stop me. That's how the system is meant to work. Doesn't mean that they are saints, that they're going to rule liberally a lot of the time, but they can't be relied upon by activist conservatives because it's not how the Supreme Court is structured.
And then, you know, coincidentally, the other side of that argument then applies for when Biden, if Biden wins, and the polling looking very good, as it should. I mean, with a global pandemic and now this story about the Russians and, you know, the economy in shambles, I would expect the polls to be much, much wider. But when Biden takes over, your argument still applies for Biden. As bad as conservatives may think it's going to be, it's not the wild swing that people are going to make it out to be. Is that your argument?
Well, you know, Democrats have never really, I mean, conservatives don't see it this way, but Democrats have generally put judges on the court. They don't put activists on the court. I mean, there was a time where you put strip politicians, you put governors on the court. You put political actors on the court. That hasn't been the trend for either party. The reason why Ruth Bader Ginsburg is there is because Clinton thought about picking Mario Cuomo and Bruce Babbitt. And Cuomo was giving him a hard time, and there was a lot of pushback on Babbitt from the left and the right. And Clinton was getting really frustrated, and Orrin Hatch calls him up. And Orrin Hatch says, you should take a look at Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You know, she's pretty liberal, but, you know, she's a fair jurist, and I think she would, you know, be someone who can get through the Senate. Now, she was somebody who publicly disagreed with the reasoning behind Roe v. Wade. It wasn't against the result, but offered a critique of the logic behind it. And on the lower court, she actually had a record of siding with the conservative justices more than a majority of the time. So that's why she's in, not because she was a left-wing firebrand. That's the kind of people that Democrats generally have put on the court,
right,
in recent years. So don't expect Biden to make this, you know, a left-wing party. But you're going to get fair justices that are going to interpret the Constitution in a common sense way, not a clinically rigid way, which is what I think a lot of liberals worry about with the court.
Yeah, I mean, I look at, you know, Trump just came out with his list of or is coming out with his list of judges when he gets another Supreme Court nominee, which, you know, a nice election ploy. It's not going to happen between now and then. But, you know, most of them are all Federalist Society people. And I don't know that there's the equal on the left of the kind of organization that the right has when you look at these judge appointments.
I think people have tried. I mean, there's groups like the Alliance for Justice and the American Constitution Society. Biden, you know, Biden was judiciary chair. Biden is the guy who did the Robert Bork hearings. He, of course, did the Clarence Thomas hearings. He is very familiar with the judicial confirmation process. And he, as he ran in the primaries, someone who believes in norms, believes in bipartisanship, does not want the court to be a partisan vehicle. I would not expect him to pick, you know, far left judges, the judges that Republicans like, but he's going to approach this, you know, in a Biden way. And there may be someone on the left that get a little frustrated with that, but on the whole, if he can replace Ginsburg and Breyer with people like Ginsburg and Breyer, and maybe he can even replace Alito or Thomas, because they're at 70 or above right now. People on the left will take that deal.
No, no, because look, I don't want the court to be one side. I want them to be fair. I want them to interpret the law as it is and not make stuff up as we're going along. And I think most people like that. So, you know, there's part of me that goes, how do you get back to a day where a Republican like Hatch goes to a Democratic president and says, here's a couple of people that, and this was commonplace back then, here are some people that get through, and you actually have that kind of, and I know this is a utopian thought process, but you actually have some kind of coordination and conversation and give and take. I know,
it wasn't
radical.
That long ago. I mean, Clinton did this with Orrin Hatch.
Sure.
I mean, it wasn't a zillion years ago.
It seems
was
like
about 20 plus years ago. And the thing that is so frustrating about the Merrick Garland situation was literally Orrin Hatch said a week beforehand, they should pick Merrick Garland, but they won't. They're going to pick somebody far left. And Obama said, okay, Orrin Hatch, I'll pick your guy, Merrick Garland, because he's a fair jurist. And then Orrin Hatch stabbed him in the back like all the other Republicans did. I mean, that could have been a very balanced court. And Republicans decided to be greedy and not give that guy a fair hearing. And they thought they won the game with Gorsuch and Kavanaugh. Now they're grinding their teeth because it didn't work out the way they thought it was going to.
Yeah. So let's move on to the election. I mean, because the polling numbers I saw, you know, had Biden well ahead. Although, you know, the thing that I saw said, you know, Trump still has a lead in the enthusiasm gap, whatever that means. How are you seeing this playing out over the next couple of months?
Well, I wrote a piece about this in Real Clear Politics earlier this week. There are only two presidents, incumbent presidents, in the era of polling, going back to 1936, who came back from behind and won. And that is George W. Bush, who was behind 2.7 points in the Real Clear Politics average in the summer of 2004, and Barack Obama, who was behind 1.5 points against Mitt Romney in October of 2012. That's it for comebacks of elected incumbents. Now, Harry Truman came back. He's an unelected incumbent in 1948. He was 11 points down in the summer. Gerald Ford was an unelected incumbent who was actually down by 33 points and actually was ahead by one in the final Gallup poll and then lost by a hair. But they didn't go through the process of being elected in the first place. They didn't have that familiarity with the public coming into office. Donald Trump has been behind 10 points in the Real Clear Politics average. It was 9.6 last I checked. I mean, could he come back? Yeah, I mean, there's a first for everything. But it would be an historic comeback. It has never happened before that an elected incumbent who has been in office from the get-go, the public knows who the guy is, they've seen him up close, they have a very good opinion of whether they like his performance, they don't like his performance. To have them have a change of heart between the summer and the fall, it just hasn't happened in the last 90 years. And probably beyond that, we still have the polling to prove it. So, I mean, if the pandemic gets better and the economy improves, maybe he can pull it off.
Who knows? Yeah.
There's some foreign policy crisis that he wonderfully handles. Everyone feels good about it. Maybe. But I don't think it's a correct argument to say, well, don't trust the polls. They're wrong. There are a lot of polls. It's not like one or two polls. You have a slew of national polls. You have a slew of state polls. You have a slew of Senate polls. And all from different outfits with different methodologies. And they all point in the same direction. So I don't think you can just sort of brush that off and say, forget the polls. This is where the country is today. They don't want to reelect Trump as of today. And so something external has to happen to dramatically change their mind for him to win.
Yeah, but you know, he said the other day in a tweet that he's now learning internal polling. And the heck with all those polling companies and Fox and all those. He knows he's going to win.
I mean, his aides have learned to feed him the data they want to feed him. But look where they're spending their money. The Trump campaign is spending in Iowa and Ohio and Georgia. That it's not where you spend if you're on offense. That's where you spend when you're on defense.
Yeah,
so you don't believe me. Follow the money. And that will tell you the answer of where this race stands.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, especially this Russia thing. Which, you know, again, the defense, do you buy the defense of he didn't know? You know, he's ignorant. You know, sorry, we've got an ignorant president. Do you buy that defense?
Well, it's early, and I can't pretend to know every last aspect of this story, so I don't want to get out ahead of it. I'm obviously not going to trust the White House line on its face, but I'm always willing to. The saying that you don't want to necessarily assume the worst is because you don't like the guy. Sometimes, you know, things are complicated. But what's interesting to me is, you know, we've had so many of these kinds of scandals for the last 3.5 years, and almost every one of them has not moved the political needle. I mean, his polling has never been good, but it's been stable. And he's never been ahead of Biden, but Biden's lead has been stable through much of this race. And between between January and May, generally around 5 or 6 point lead for Biden. What's made it go up to 10 points? What was the event that happened? It wasn't the pandemic. Because when the pandemic happened in March, Trump had a little bit of a bump and it receded, but it was essentially around the same level that it has been. It was George Floyd and the protests that followed that. That is when it jumps. George Floyd died on May 25th and the news coverage started nationally on May 27th. And that is when that poll starts to really widen. And that's, you know, that's not intuitive because a lot of people thought, well, these riots in the streets, disorder, there's going to be white backlash that's going to help Trump. This is in Trump's wheelhouse. And Lord knows he tried to exploit it to his end. But that is not how it has worked out. This is the one thing out of all the nonsense we've gone through for 3.5 years. That is the thing that's made this. You know, Biden being marginally ahead to Biden being indisputably ahead.
It's indefensible what happened. And you're right. It was right in his wheelhouse. I did think that you would have seen some kind of defense of him, and you just haven't. Not even the knuckle draggers are really out. You know, the white supremacists have kind of even, you know, backed off a little bit.
Well, there's a Los Angeles Times story this week reporting from a rural Arizona town, a Trump stronghold. I mean, it's not that the entire town's turned against him, but they're finding people said, I voted for Trump and I'm sick of this. When he tear gassed protesters to hold a Bible in front of a church, that was it for me. I mean, there are people out there that has literally been what's the last straw? That's the last straw.
Yeah, I mean,
for a good number of people.
If you're his political advisor, do you do that? I mean, I looked at that as going, you know, that is just, you know, I know that plays to some people, him walking through the gauntlet of riot-geared police. I know that plays with some people, but for the mass of the country, that is not how we see leaders and presidents.
You know, you can understand, you know, he won. He's there. He's president. He rejected all the kind of goo-goo advice all the way through.
Yeah.
He never did what the polls said he should do. He trusted his gut. He played to his base. And that was enough to eke out a narrow Electoral College win, and they decided literally from day one, and the Muslim travel ban, that was the ticket to governing for the next 4 years and winning re-election. So you can understand them saying, let's do something similarly crazy today in the middle of these protests. It's worked before, but you know, I think they went to that well one time too many.
One too often. Make sure you check out Bill's article, The GOP Traded Its Principles for Conservative Judges. It was a bad deal, he says, over at Washington Post. We'll get links out. Bill, always great talking with you. I hope you come back again real soon.
Always a pleasure. Take care.
Good stuff. Our good friend Bill Scheer. Again, make sure you check out his work. Also, his website, BillScheerMedia.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.